Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Landy Vienna Sweetie Podcast 92. Could be 92, could be 93. I'm not sure at this point, but there we go. My name's Will Jones. Joining me tonight is Mr. Chris Manning. Good evening, Chris.
Evening, Will. You okay?
Yeah, not too bad, thank you. Not too bad.
Perfect.
Also on tonight is Tom Jenkins. Hello, Tom.
Hello, Will. How are we doing, matey?
I'm good, thank you. I'm good. Also on tonight is James. Hi, James.
Right, Will, how are we doing, pal?
Not too bad, not too bad. And not last but not least, and definitely not BTEC Ian, is Ian Rosbottom. How are you?
I'm all right. My new nickname.
You're right. You're right now, yeah.
I'm excited to make it to air tonight.
Good stuff. Yeah. Good
Will,
stuff.
Can I just start off, Will, by just asking you a question? Did you mispronounce your own surname then?
I did indeed, yes. My name is Will Jones, not Jewin.
Yeah, there we go. Just like adding an accent on then, like a Francis Victor today, we're becoming a bit more French.
No, not quite. But yeah, no, I thought you were going to ask me a different question then about where the last one went, seeing as everyone's been complaining. But we'll gloss over that.
No idea.
No, that never happened.
What podcast?
Yeah, exactly. Right, so we'll talk about the more topical stuff. So we are recording this in the aftermath of the World Cup final, so it's been France versus Croatia this afternoon, where, quite frankly, France absolutely annihilated Croatia.
Vive la France!
What do we make of it?
They got a Mingin penalty. I still think
you can say that. Surely you thought that was a pen based on the other handballs that have been given this tournament.
If that's a penalty, I don't really understand the handball rule. That's my take on it. Like, I don't know how you get your hand out the way.
You roll
it down in slow mo, and anything looks like an handball. But then you do it in real time, and I was just like, that changed the guy. France were mint, but I really feel like that ruined it because it just changed the momentum of the game just for half time.
I'd take umbrage with the assertion that France destroyed him. I think it was a lot closer than that up until that 65 minutes time when things went a bit mad for 5 minutes. And I don't think it was as cut and dried as that, to be honest. I thought Croatia were well and truly in the game, even at 2-1. You know, even at 3-1 at times, you know, they still were playing some really good stuff. I mean, there's not a lot you can do when you throw everybody forward and they have their fastest guys on the break. That's just the way it goes, isn't it?
No, they look very, very competent, Croatia, I thought. And especially at 1-1, I mean, it's a great goal that they scored. That's the thing. France were gifted their first two, even their first three. I mean, Pogba, let's be honest, was left alone after he'd originally had a shot and was given about all the time in the world to score the third. So I think they can count themselves a bit unfortunate. But let's be honest, I mean, they'll be disappointed tonight, but we'll look back at this thinking we've had a fantastic tournament, much better than anyone expected, and they'll probably be very, very happy with what they got in the end.
I mean, I just touching on the penalty, I would have said that it was Ball's hand, but, you know, there we go. But, I wouldn't say that France completely obliterated them, given that some of them were very lucky and there was some extremely dodgy decisions, and just the fact that the ref took so long to actually decide whether that was or not just, you know, made me question it a little bit. But there we are.
One of my mates reckons a goalkeeper's injured and can't dive properly. If you look at the goals that France got, as Croatia goalkeeper, he doesn't dive for two of them. One of them, maybe his weight's going the wrong direction. But the fourth one by Mbappe, I thought he could have got further across to that. My mate reckons his hamstring's gone.
Possibly, but you know, I think if they came out and said that, it'd just be another line of carrier's excuses, wouldn't it?
Mad lad concussion, yeah.
No, it obviously split opinion between two of ourselves. James, Tom, you had a little bit of a Twitter spat earlier, didn't you?
Not what you're on about. We're best mates.
Well, I was about to say James is my best friend in this podcast. I don't know what you're on about.
Stop stirring up drama, Will.
It didn't happen. Yeah, but no, I wouldn't have said that France were particularly much better than Croatia, but I'd say that there was only really one deserved winner of that competition, and it wasn't either of those teams, was it, lads? It was indeed England. They went out.
I thought you were going to say Panama, then.
they went out on Wednesday 2-1 to Croatia, and I'd say that it was quite satisfying that they lost today, but I can't be too bitter about that.
But I had money on France anyway from the start of the tournament, so I felt very justified in that win.
Lucky you. But no, would it be right to conclude that England have actually improved or are any better than we were or have been particularly successful this time? Obviously, we've done a lot better in terms of progression, but whether or not you know you can actually classify us as a better team still divides opinion. What do you think, Chris?
As far as I'm concerned, they were much improved. I think taking away the arsehole aspect that we've suffered from for years and years and years has made a massive difference. And even just having a little bit of solidarity amongst supporters behind them has been a refreshing change too. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind whatsoever that Allardyce would have won the whole thing. But as a general thing, I think the World Cup's a curious one because you can see managers such as Southgate and Martinez that would probably struggle to get a semi-reasonable job in the Premiership, maybe even top half of the Championship, can come in there and over that short period of time gel a team together to be greater than the sum of its parts. Because, I mean, we look at the England team, we had a great deal of luck in the early stages with the set pieces, with the penalties, I should say, because when those dried up later on in the tournament, our main threat, or the person we thought our main threat, being Kane, faded away a little bit. Whether he was injured or not, it's another matter. Sterling, not necessarily firing on all cylinders in front of goal. There's a couple of little options in there that made me think that our achievement in isolation is stunning, because there's a lot of factors that worked against us at the same time.
Yeah,
and cool. So, yeah,
the referees were atrocious this tournament.
So as far as I'm concerned, I vaguely remember watching 1990 World Cup when I was about 8, but this has been in the last sort of 25, 30 years I've been watching football properly, it's been the best England performance by a million miles, probably even as far as on a par, if not slightly better than Euro 96, just because of the wider tournament base. I know there's arguments about the teams they've played against not being up there, but that's the luck of the draw, isn't it? You can only beat what's in front of you.
Yeah, of course. Ian, would you go with that?
Yeah, I think they've improved. I actually think personally this is the best World Cup for entertainment all round that I've ever seen. England have progressed. They were found, I think, pretty badly wanting against a better team in Croatia, and they should have learnt a lot from that. We need a real central midfielder who can keep the ball. Maybe that's not news anyway. Whether somebody like Harry Winks can come through and be that sort of player for England. But I think full credit to Gareth Southgate for sort of making a team that is organised and can play. And you see that if you put the timing on the set pieces for these international games, is that international teams are never as well organised defensively as club teams. And Southgate recognised that, took advantage of him. And I say fair play to that. If anyone wants to kind of call us out for being a set piece team, well, he recognised the weakness and he exploited it, as far as I'm concerned. That's sensible management.
Yeah, I definitely think that we used that to the advantage. I wouldn't say that it was definitely something that people on Twitter would call us set piece merchants.
It doesn't really matter how you score your goals or what teams you come against. You can only beat what's put in front of you. We may have had to face the likes of Panama, Tunisia, and had to score our goals through mainly penalties and headers and stuff like that. But it doesn't matter as long as you progress or win in the end.
No, of course it doesn't. But yeah.
Do we have any criticism of the team, or are we just?
I subscribe to the school of thought that Allardyce being in charge would have beaten Croatia completely. I'm not a Southgate fan by any stretch, and I think it comes back to the point that Chris made in that I don't think he would struggle to get a mid-table Premier League job. I think he struggled to get a Premier League job. The guy's only achievement at club level is relegating Middlesbrough after a long period of consolidation in the Premier League, which is hardly a massive achievement in my book. I feel as though team selection was wrong at times. I would have played Sterling instead of Lingard and then had a proper striker playing in that role. And while I give you credit, and I agree with you, Ian, completely, that the exploiting at set pieces was very impressive, we didn't really have a plan B. And he had no idea what to say to his team after half-time. It seemed as though first half we were always very, very competent. And then in the second half, we ran out of steam. And in the end, that cost us massively in a game that we should have won to get back to a World Cup final, which I think was infinitely achievable.
Not that we're biased towards Allardyce or anything, Tom.
No, not of course, but I think I'd like to think that I'm putting forward points that are valid more so than just based off the fact that I prefer Allardyce's manager to Southgate.
Yeah, of course. No, I was only messing. But,
no, that's right, mate.
No, I just thought that Southgate, he's done incredibly well with the team that he's had, to be fair to him. And I know what you mean, that second half, when we came out, it was like a foregone conclusion, even though, you know, it was level. And
I think it was too...
Sorry,
I don't really subscribe that we would have been better under Allardyce, especially as Allardyce came out and said that against Tunisia and Panama, he would have played Dyer and Henderson together in the midfield. So I'm not so sure about Allardyce, but what I would say is I think he was far too loyal to Dele Alli, who I don't think had a good game in the whole tournament. And I think he could have been a bit more inventive with changing the team. That would be my... And I agree that he didn't, either it was he was naive or the team was naive, but that second half he didn't get it right against Croatia, and that did subscribe to us blowing it. But maybe that's just down to lack of experience.
No, I would agree with that. I think you saw that there was a team there for the taking, because I watched that first half against Croatia, and there's a team with a lot of fantastic ball playing midfielders who were unable to pick a pass for 45 minutes, and you didn't take advantage of that. And as a fan watching it, I just wanted to see my team be a bit more ruthless. And I agree with you. I think the inexperience meant that we didn't have that cutting edge that infinitely cost us.
I don't think you can blame the manager as much for Kane missing from a yard out at the side of the goal, and for Sterling also having half chances that he failed to convert, having done so all season for City. So I think that's a bit mean on Southgate. I think he's done unbelievably well given what we expected to be his own limitations going into the tournament. So yeah, I don't think there's any criticism ascribed to him. I don't think there's any question of him being replaced.
Not like there might have been
other times with an England manager coming out the back end of a World Cup.
No, I'd go with that as well. And, you know, I just thought that you can't be too critical of the team. You know, in general, they have done really well. I mean, in my lifetime, it's definitely been the best and most exciting World Cup from, you know, as a youngster, you know, and unfortunately it's been the first time that I've also been able to go out to a pub and get drenched in beer, which was a massive mistake.
But, we were in something nice, Will.
Like I did. I've got a massive lump on my head after that Trippier goal. Someone launched the bottle straight at me.
Lovely.
But, I was in a boozer in Leeds for the Sweden game, and after they won, some bloke got bollock naked and climbed up on a roof and just started dancing.
Someone ran by and just decided to climb a lamppost and then stand on top of it for 10 minutes and refused to come down. But yeah,
no. There were nearly so many fights in the print works where I was watching it in Manchester.
No, it's. I'm not trying to be edgy here or just put out an unpopular opinion, but you know, I just thought that, Ali wasn't great, and I thought Young wasn't great either.
Young shouldn't have played after the first couple of games. I mean, he's a one-trick pony, isn't he?
But as much as I'm going to criticise them, I also thought, like, this is the main bit that I didn't want to be edgy about, but it's just I didn't think Modric was that good against us. I thought it was terrible, and there was a lot of points where I found myself saying that was that, you know, Hendo could have completed that, or, you know, I just thought he played terribly, to be honest, and that's not me being bitter or anything, but I just thought that even though we weren't quite up to the test, I didn't think that Croatia were particularly better than us on the day. And it was just the fact that in the last half an hour or whatever, we just weren't on the ball at the back, and, you know, it cost us. But it's a shame.
I'd give you a further unpopular opinion if you want. Those videos of people lobbing beer everywhere looks horrendous.
Well, I can only imagine
the absolute awkwardness of me being stood in the middle of there. All your clothes would get all sticky and full, stinking of beer. Not only that, you've queued for about 4 hours to get a pint, and then £8 a go, like at the Reebok, and next thing you know, people are saving a quarter of a pint at the bottom, not for a spontaneous moment of celebration, just for those videos. It's just, I was sat there with my old man head on, shaking my head, thinking, what an absolute shambles. What a waste of booze.
It is completely, but, you know, to those who want to do it, fair enough. And, you know, I've sort of got the buzz for it after the first couple of games, and I went and I got told otherwise, and afterwards I realised why. But it was a shame in the way that it ended, and I think that, you know, a lot of us were sort of hoping but also presuming that we might have made it even to the final. It's sort of funny how we've sort of been ignorant towards today, if anything. But it's just been another game, hasn't it, really?
Yeah.
Well, did any of you watch the third place game?
As soon as I saw Phil Jones in that team, I'm like, nope, avoiding that.
Yeah, utterly pointless.
I mean, I was sat with an hour's drive from Halifax. I'll get onto that in a bit. And I was trying to debate whether go to the boozer and watch England or whether to drive to Halifax. And I ended up going, which just shows you how reluctant I was to actually go and watch England as soon as I saw fucking Bill Jones.
Christ in there. Almighty, I'm watching Bolton Wanderers is the better option.
I know, since when did that ever happen? But
yeah. Mm-hmm. It helped that I actually got you the team sheet.
Oh, I know, Christ. It's disappointing, I think, but at the same time, I don't think you can be too critical of the fact that at the end of the day, we got to a World Cup semi-final, and you know, as much as it's been nice to have a sort of community feel to the country, I'm also sort of glad to see the back of a lot of fake football fans, as I'm sure a lot of you will have seen on my Twitter. I've loved to express the fact that I cannot be standing all those people who haven't got a clue what it's coming home even means, what the trophy looks like, and all that are bothered about is what the players actually look like.
I was sat in the pub for like the semi-final, and just someone behind me was just like saying phrases, just like, why are they not trying as hard now? Why are they not trying as hard in the second half? Like, why don't they just stick one in? It's just like,
I would have hit him.
Yeah, just
for confidence.
Yeah.
And he wouldn't have felt it.
Nah. Yeah, despite all the fake football fans, so there's a lot of positives to take forward into Euro 2020. Like, loads of players really stepped up the game. Trippier and Maguire, Pickford especially, I'd say, were the standouts.
Trippier was fantastic. Our player of the tournament, I'd say. Just so consistent. But,
yeah. If he doesn't make team the tournament, I'm going to be fuming.
Oh, I know, yeah. But I'm amazed that Kane actually ended up with Golden Boot. I mean, it got broadcasted today, and I thought, but did he actually get that many? And then a lot of people.
I mean, he scored five in his first two games.
Well, there's somebody that had a tenner run at 16-1, lads. I was quite happy for him to scab his way to that particular award.
Anyway, right. Should we get on to talking about what this podcast is actually made for?
No.
I know we said this last week. We didn't have a podcast last week, did we? No, we didn't.
What podcast?
No. Right. Bolton Wanderers, what's been happening? We'll start off with transfers. So, since we last spoke, Aaron Osteamer has signed for us, as has Clayton Donaldson, as has Paul Olkoff. Sorry,
Havlovkovsky.
I've absolutely butchered that.
Havlovkovsky.
I think one that we're all a little bit confused about is Philippe Maurice. Has he or hasn't he left, signed, stayed, gone? I don't really know what's going on.
I think he's still holding out that we might actually try and bring him back, especially if we can't get another winger to replace him.
It's a funny one, but I mean, I'd definitely take him back, not just for the fact of making up numbers, but I think he was actually fantastic that second half of the season. I feel like, even though at first I was a bit apprehensive about what he could do at championship level, you know, I'd definitely take him on based on what he showed us at the end. But yeah, Chris, what do you make of that?
I think we can't be too fussy when it comes to cheap, versatile players. I think you summed it up. I completely agree with you about Maurice's his achievements last season, or against quite a few odds given his CV to that date. He'd never played that level before, had he? So good on him. We should definitely look to keep him if we get the opportunity. And from whispers that go around, it's to do with his agent's fees that Wanderers want him to pay to cover his own bill, almost. But if that's the case, then I think it's a no-brainer getting him. He knows the place, we know him. And he'd definitely be up for 20-25 appearances over the course of the season off the bench, and I doubt he'd kick up much of a fuss about that either.
No, definitely not. Well, James, what do you make of the other signings? So we've got Osteamer, Donaldson, Okofsky. I mean, obviously we haven't seen much of him, and I think everyone can sort of go with that, you know, and not really pretend that we've followed his whole career like Arsenal fans would.
The only thing I can say about Olkowski is that I did see him play in the Europa League game against Arsenal, but other than that, I have absolutely no idea what he's done over his career.
I believe he's injured as well at the minute, not that that's got any bearing on...
I don't think that he's injured. I think he's just behind, because he's behind pre-season for like 2 weeks or something, so...
Yeah, fair enough.
Probably playing catch-up. Osteamer... if we play to his strengths, I'm incredibly happy with that. But I think we might need another target man other than Donaldson to help just take the load off of him. But yeah, but Donaldson, I am quite happy with, especially because he is a threat to bring off the bench.
Mm. I mean, talking of which, you know, having someone to play off, we're still linked with a number of players. So I've written a few down here. They've got, so obviously the one that's ongoing more than any other is Charlie Wyke. I think there's been another bit, as Nixon would say, bit in the paper about that today, saying that I think we're still in the chase for him. Given that I think we've now got a bit of competition for him. I know we've said previously that we think they possibly are marquee signing if it was to happen. Tom, would you be happy with it if it did come off?
I think happy is a strong word. It's difficult to be happy with a marquee signing being a bloke who's never proven himself at the championship level. But from what I can make of Charlie Wyke and from what I know from Bradford fans, is, you know, he's a target man. He suits Parkinson's style. He knows where the net is. He seems to be able to get himself into a position to score goals, much more than more so than Medin used to do, which I think can only be a benefit. Yeah. And of course, he's younger. So it looks as though we seem to be going down the route of trying to replace Medin with someone who's very, very similar to him in style, but with a couple of fewer years off the mileage. So it depends on whether the price is right. If prices are to be believed, it seems like we want to spend £1 million on him. That's for wages. I mean, let's be honest, for a League One striker and for us to pay £1 million, I mean, really?
From rumours I've heard, I think Sunderland already tried for a seven-figure bid, but he might be trying to hold out for a championship move, so maybe we could work that to our favour if that's true.
Yeah, I believe Sky Sports are reporting that, saying that he's keen to leave, but keen to progress, as it were, go on to a different level. So maybe it's a case of him having more power over what bids accepted and what's not than Bradford.
Yeah, I mean, it's escaped me which club it was, but I think they've received a 500,000 bid for him.
That was Peterborough, I believe.
Peterborough, was it? Yeah.
I think Peterborough's not a step up.
No, definitely not. But, you know, whether or not we compete at that price, I mean, you know, we'll get on to finances in a bit as to whether that's even available at the minute. But, you know, if it gets to the region of £1 million, I think we're out of that already. And I wouldn't even pay it, even if we had the money, I don't think. Ian, would you go with that?
I would definitely go with that. I would have. I assume it's dead now, but I was more excited about the Joe Garner rumour and rumours that we could get him for pretty much nothing. I know he's 30, but if we were saying where we put our money, I would much prefer it going towards a player of Garner's calibre, even someone that we know could do a job. I can't imagine in the climate that we seem to be in, I know we're going to come on to it later, I just can't see us putting £1 million in Charlie Wyke. I just would be so surprised if that happened. So it's not only that I don't want it, I just can't see it.
But that's surely the market we're in, though, is to look to buy somebody of that ilk, that age, that bracket. Because we've shown that a good 3 months in a season, scored 8, 9, 10 goals, you can sell them for 4, 5, 6 times, like we did with Medin. And White's got a pedigree that's 1,000 times the standard of Medin. Now, I don't know what he's like as a player. I don't think I've ever seen him play, but I think that's going to be the philosophy, isn't it? That you buy these players, yeah, you might spend £1 million, but you might get 6 times that back if they have a good 12 months, 18 months, even less than that. I don't think it's too fanciful to think that's the sort of player we're after. I totally agree it's fanciful that we're going to spunk £1 million in anyone.
Yeah, that's more what I'm feeling. I can understand why we're after him. It's just I can't see us parting with £1 million.
But I think if you are gonna spend that on anyone or any position, it has to be the striker, doesn't it? Really, more than anyone. I mean, we're still looking at what 7 players, but if you're gonna urge the club to buy in any, you know, particular position that's gonna be the marquee signing, it's gotta be a centre forward at this rate, I think. I mean, I was going to touch on Joe Garner, actually. He's just one of two rumours that have gone particularly quiet over these last couple of weeks. Him and Chungi. It seems as if that's gone off the boil as well. I'm not sure, you know, what we can expect from that as to whether that's even going to happen anymore.
Also, Texeria?
Texeria is also another that's gone quiet. Yeah, I'm not sure what's happening with him.
Maybe Lee was just...
Possibly.
Well, no, I think it was one of the videos that Mark Arles did yesterday, he was talking about Teixeira and saying that was a Lee Anderson deal completely down to him because he's the one doing the negotiations on behalf of the club. So if anything's going to happen on that front, I assume we'll hear
We'll hear first from the super agent in emoji form.
So is he supposedly still out in Faro then negotiating?
All I remember seeing on this video that Mark Isles did yesterday was about the fact that to share a deal is simply being done on behalf of the club by Lee Anderson. So whereas there might be other people negotiating for other players, i.e. Jack Cobbs, i.e. anyone else that we can think of, that one is specifically Lee's prerogative.
Mm. I mean, there's others that obviously were interested, as you say, Tom. Three prominent ones that I can think of are Boaz Myhill, who we've been linked with this morning. We are apparently in talks to sign him, and I know he was one of the names that cropped up actually on, you know, one of our shopping lists right at the start of the summer.
Wasn't Boaz Myhill debunked by Mark and Lee?
Quite possibly, but you know, I think that was nearly a month ago now.
He was in training with the club, but then said that nothing would happen. So I don't know why he would choose us to train with if he wasn't assuming there'd be a deal on the table.
Maybe it was a trial and it's now come to an end. Perhaps that's the only other thing.
Possibly, yeah.
That's a weird one for me. I couldn't see the point in Boaz Myhill. We shift Amos's wages off the bill and then put them into another goalkeeper.
If I'm not mistaken, I'm pretty sure Myhill was the goalkeeper at Hull when Parkinson was manager, so he could just be doing him a favour.
Possibly.
I didn't think of that.
The other one who I think we're linked with, saw a tweet this morning and I'm not familiar with this name at all. Sam Walker, who I believe is a ex-Colchester goalkeeper, and we're supposedly imminently signing him, literally based on one tweet. Whether or not you want to read into that, I'm not sure, but it could just be, you know, a possible option should we let Jake Turner go out alone. And, I mean, that's one that's been going on for a while, isn't it? It's one that's divided opinion massively and whether or not he should be promoted. I think he's on a professional contract now. It's just whether he should be playing first team.
I mean, a keeper from a League Two club that's just been released from that League Two club, but doesn't exactly inspire confidence even as a second choice. So,
I think it'd be more. The
only positive I can think you can see for this Walker bloke is that he has played quite a lot of games, so he's experienced. But he's only 26, which for a goalkeeper is, you know.
Young.
A young pup, to say something. He's also 6'6", so he's a big lad. But again, it's as you say, Will, it's whether we take a lot of confidence from this being a legitimate rumour simply off one tweet when we've got no idea of the source that he's working that from.
Yeah, definitely. And then there was one more that's also gotten a little bit quiet. We were set to sign. It was either European or just an international winger. Supposedly of, you know, quite a decent name back in his day. Sounds quite similar, you know, familiar for, you know, a bottom one just signing. Any ideas as to who that could be?
Diego Capel.
I know that name went round, but I thought the likes of Notts County were after him, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, we don't be competing with them. Fuck, you know.
We can't get in Nolan's way.
I think it was me, wasn't it, who mentioned that when Lee was talking about Vamos, look at the club site at 3 p.m. whenever it was, when he talked about Amos's loan to Millwall, because one part of it was in Flemish, so from Belgium, the other part was in Spanish. I thought that was linking to Diego Capel because he just played for Anderlecht, of course, assuming that it was going to be that difficult to decipher and just a single tweet, of course.
I think you're giving Lee Anderson a lot of credit there.
I know.
I think one thing...
He was just desperate for something else other than Amos. That was it.
I think one thing we can all agree on, though, is the fact that we are still very sparse in terms of numbers. And even the rumour mill, you know, it's really not kicked into life properly yet. And we're still lacking, like I said, 7 signings. And at the minute, we're just about linked with 7 and have been since the start of the summer. And you'd be hoping, as Parkinson said in his post-match presser on Saturday, you know, that the recruitment has to step up this week.
I'm hoping they've just got some names in the pipeline that we've not heard about. Like, none of us had heard anything about Olkowski before suddenly his agency tweeted out that he'd moved to Bolton. So
yeah, same with
if you want to take the optimistic route, then you can go with that.
Yeah.
Jack Hobbs on trial as well.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he played at Halifax on Saturday as well.
To be honest, I don't think Beggars can be choosers. I'd be snapping his hand off to try and get him to come and play for us, fit or not fit.
Yeah, definitely.
He was quite a decent centre-half at one time, wasn't he?
I think he was, yeah. I think at this stage, though, it's separating, making up numbers and making quality signings, isn't it? And like you said, Tom Beggars can't be choosers, but, you know, we have got to differentiate. You know, all right, we do need 7-8 players, whatever it is, but at the same time, we don't want them to then turn out to be absolute trash, because then all they'll do is get slated and won't play. Yeah. And then we may as well just have 15 or whatever we've got now.
Yeah. Well, you actually went to the Halifax, Matt, didn't you?
Yeah.
Did Hobbs look all right?
He did. He only played half an hour because the team was changed completely on the hour mark. He played at left back, actually. But was just solid pretty much throughout. I mean, I know we conceded a goal, but that was all down, you know, our right-hand side. So there's not much that can be said for that. But
See, that's what I heard. But I also heard that because of that solid 30 minutes, they might continue his trial onto further friendlies, whether that's the behind-closed-doors game at Morecambe or whether he plays at Leyland against Girona.
Yeah, quite possibly. But I think we've all just got to say, you know, look, it needs to get a move on, because I think, what is it now, two, 3 weeks until the deadline day?
I think that centre defence is a position, not just that we need numbers, but we need quality. First team. You know, for me, it is definitely not just a case of getting anybody in. I said, I think only on the chat to you lads, that if we start the season with Beavers and Wheater as centre, and now especially with Andrew Taylor as left back, and that's going to be our first choice defence, I can't see anything other than relegation.
I'm still praying that we get Robinson back. I'm praying to every god.
I'm holding out for that as well. And I think one thing that you probably all would have slated me for as well at the end of the season, saying that we needed Reece Burt back, and then going and seeing him signing for Hull. You know, I think that's actually, you know, we've lost out there. And whether or not we actually went back in for him is a different matter. But I still think that he would have been perfect again for another season.
Not at that price, that's the thing.
We were not paying 1.5 million for him. No, we were not paying 1.5 million for him.
No, even on loan, you know, but I think West Ham wanted him sold, didn't they? So that was possibly a non-starter, but, you know.
I wonder if there's anyone at West Ham, given that they've seemed to be on a spending spree and we apparently have good relations with them, considering we've taken Colin and Burke off them last season, whether there's someone from their reserves that we might be able to nick off. Because there must be some huge competition for places there with the spending spree they're on now.
Yeah, hopefully. But no one that I know of, I don't think. But yeah, no, we've just touched on pre-season. So we'll go with that for a bit. So first of all, St Mirren. Chris, what happened there?
Well, we didn't pay our bill, did we? You know, in bills being the players' salaries, or one player, or two players, you know, different sources give you different figures. But I find it hard to think that anything other than Ken's dropped a bollock with it. Whether the players are in the right by doing what they did is another matter altogether. But you can't not pay someone just because you think you might be moving on. I think that's, you know, that's just a bit daft, that. And it's not Amos's fault that he was given that contract. It's the people that made the decision at the time, because you'd find me a Bolton fan that didn't want to sign Amos on a long, long, long deal after how well he played in those 10 games on loan. And I'll show you a liar, because Amos was a cracking signing. Yeah. And he's just fallen victim to that Bolton Wanderers curse, hasn't he, where we sign people, we find something wrong with them. Be it, you know, the likes of Chris Taylor, he looked at us funny. Oh, Ben Amos, he lets goals in from long range. All keepers let goals in, long range or otherwise. I find it hard to be too critical of the players for sticking up for one of the teammates, even if it is someone that's on his way out. But for it to elicit the response from Ken, the predictable response, in that he picks a hole in an argument, he finds a player that everyone hates that they can rail upon. That last year it was Moxie, this year it's Amos, and deflects any sort of criticism from himself. Just pay the man. Simple.
I think it's a very good point, and you're not wrong. I mean, it was clear from the outset. I think we could have guessed that the person who might have been affected most by this not paying bonuses or wages was going to be Amos, because of the astronomic figures that he's on in comparison to the rest of the squad. But you're not wrong. I mean, it's a joke to not pay your staff, regardless of whether you think they're moving on. And I completely applauded the players at the time for for standing by him or and any of the other individuals that were affected by it, because that you know, the players have talked about for some time now about the fantastic spirit that they've got, and that proves it, the fact that they're willing to stand by someone who's not been there for an entire season or a couple of seasons now. It just shows that there's a good bond there, and hopefully that will translate to good performances on the pitch if we can get this problem resolved.
I'm just hoping that there's not that many knock-on, you know, effects for it from this that's gone on. I mean, obviously we've had two pre-season friendlies cancelled, obviously massive player disputes, and we don't know how long that's going to go on for. I mean, I know that all the players have supposedly been paid now, and obviously we've offloaded Amos, you know, temporarily. But whether or not that's going to be a recurring issue now, and obviously with the finances being in the state that they have been over the last 2 or 3 years, you know, whether or not we're going to get these glum days coming back to bite us, you know, remains to be seen. I mean, I think we'd had a discussion previously about the fact that we thought in some way we were linked with some new ownership or investment or whatever that may be, either from Russia or from a certain Jorge Mendes, but you know, whether or not that's going to happen or has happened, you know, I don't think even we can be certain of that, and it's definitely not going to become particularly attractive either for other potential investors.
I think that Chris touched on something again that was like the way it's been handled again from the club, not just the deflecting of criticism, but there wasn't a statement that came from Ken, something like, he didn't name Amos, but put up some statement like, a player who's not been involved with the club for two seasons. And it's just like, either name him or don't name him. Don't just like, put up some stupid statement and just act with like a baby because you've not paid a player. And like, and coupled again with a bit, you know, with what has supposedly happened with Philip Murray finding out that he got binned off on Twitter. It makes us look a bit daft, and I personally really disappointed with how players seem to be being treated.
I think one thing that's evident is that I think the club obviously weren't expecting the players to call them out on it. Tom, were you surprised by the reaction from Ken and co?
Not at all. I think, as Chris has said, we've come to expect that kind of reaction where he picks holes in an argument and attacks more so than explains. I mean, I was pleased that he came out with a statement that was long and detailed in talking about the situation. But there are a couple of comments in there, such as, I expect the players to reimburse the fans affected by the St Mirren game cancellation. And, you know, I will not be blackmailed, whatever. You're not being blackmailed. You're being shown that these players are not going to accept crap treatment where they're not paid their wages for doing their jobs. You wouldn't expect it in any other line of work. Why the hell should you expect it as a footballer?
Yeah, I think one thing that I've reiterated quite a few times is, you know, the players have been completely within their rights to do it. And as much as people moan about the fact that players earn far too much, at the end of the day, they're on a contract that's been agreed by both parties. And if they can't play it, if the club can't pay it, then at the end of the day, it's not the players' problem as to, you know, what their wages actually are. It's what they're agreed when they sign on.
Exactly. When is Ben Amos ever going to get paid what we assume to be, I don't know, maybe 15, 16K a week at any other club at his stage of his career as a championship footballer? You know, if I'm him, I'm thinking about my future and I'm thinking, why the hell would I not bite your hand off and be desperate to get paid that when I'll be looking at, when I leave this club at the end of this season, possibly half that if I'm lucky. Yeah. You know, there's no problem with him accepting his wage. It's up to the club, who is daft enough to give him that wage to pay it.
I mean, when you consider the negotiations that have obviously gone on with Millwall, you then have to consider the fact that both parties have obviously bartered over it, and what, you know, how the deals come about is the fact that it's about a 50-50 split, or so I believe. And you've then got to think, well, were we trying to get them to take the majority? Were they refusing? You know, were they only prepared to pay 10K? And I think, you know, that's a case of, it speaks 1,000 words, and that, you know, we're not sure whether or not he's, well, no, it's not a case of whether he's worth that amount, but it's just whether or not we were stupid enough to take that on, knowing that...
Well, if you're Millwall and you're looking at Ben Amos as possibly your second string goalkeeper, because Jordan Archer had such a great season last year, would you really want to be spending 8 to 10 thousand pounds a week on a bloke who's not even your starting goalkeeper?
To me, they've got an incredible deal.
I'd be absolutely stunned if they're paying any more than 10-15% of what we so we what his weekly wages. I think the deal is completely benefiting them. We just want to get a shot of him, don't we? That's been obvious from day one, and Ken's statements only fair to back that up. So it's like all these people circling Aston Villa for players. Why would you offer what might be a fair deal when you can take advantage of a club on its arse, desperate to get rid, to offer him peanuts and they'll take it? And I'm sure that's what we've done. I'd be absolutely astonished if it was that.
January transfer window when we were in League One. Seeing a club that looked as though they're on their knees and offered a ridiculously low amount for Mark Beavers when they just thought they could take advantage. I mean, thankfully, we weren't in that position where we needed to sell. But maybe if we hadn't sold Zach Clough, we'd have been biting the hands off. That's the sad thing about our club at the moment.
I mean, speaking of contracts, it's something, you know, that you've got to stick to. And then, you know, when it comes to renewals and you're not able to take people back on who are then, you know, offering to take massive pay cuts to stay on, like possibly Moraes. You know, he obviously just wants game time. He's not bothered about wages, and the fact that they can't even take that on because whether they are so skinned or not, I'm not sure. But they've obviously just fallen on their arse a little bit. And this is, I know it's not quite the same thing, but even with the stadium deal, I mean, that's obviously come to an end. And whether or not they can afford to renew it, or you know, or whether they're just being done out of a deal or what have you. But it's a bit, you know, it all seems to be a bit of a cycle, you know, it's all rolled into one. And it's just the shame to see us sort of going back that way. I believe the PFA getting involved at some point as well. So, you know, remains to be seen what happens with that. And, I mean, one thing that I wanted to ask you lot really was, what do you think Phil Parkinson's made of the whole thing? Because it's obviously gone over his head. And I think, Tom, I think it was you that said, you know, I'm not surprised if he walks. Chris, what do you think?
Firstly, and you know, no disrespect meant by this, I think anyone that suggests that a football manager would leave his job just because things are not rosy behind the scenes is laughable, because where else would he walk into a job, you know, a semi-prosperous club on probably on a very decent wage himself? You know, it just seems ridiculous to me that even as a matter of principle, that he put himself out of work on purpose. The man's got bills to pay, he's got mouths to feed, I'm sure. I don't think there's any chance of Parkinson dropping out of Bolton Wanderers until the day comes that we decide we don't want him anymore. He's staying. And I think it's foolish to think that there would ever be a situation where a manager would do that. I can't think of any examples off the top of my head. Please prove me wrong if I'm incorrect on that. It's not going to happen. He's not going to go anywhere, and neither should he. He's the man to take us forward, I think, especially at this moment in time. He's shown that he, against all the odds, even if it's the last kick of the season, doesn't matter. He gets things done and gets the result that we need. So there should be no reason, no idea as to why Parkinson should leave. Definitely not.
Tom, do you stand by sort of what you said, or was it sort of a heat of the moment thing?
It wasn't more so of a heat of the moment. I said it because if I were a manager in that situation, regardless of my wage, regardless of how settled my family is, it's a kind of personal pride. If I'm being undermined by whether it's a chairman or players, it seems to me that it would be the kind of thing I would do, because if I'm Parkinson, I've had two seasons at this club and successfully achieved both of the things that I wanted to achieve. Therefore, I would see that I could move into a job where I'll be working under better conditions. And let's be honest, he's had crap conditions to work under in these two seasons at this club, yet has achieved good things. So I think he could walk into any job that would have been available possibly earlier in the summer. But, you know, it's a case of, if I'm a manager, I don't want to be undermined by my chairman when I'm trying to offer people new contracts. I don't want to be undermined by my players when they're possibly haggling for new ones or aren't prepared to play for me. And it seems as though he's had quite a rocky relationship with both parties. And if I were him, there might be a turning point where he just thinks, I've had enough. I take Chris's point. Obviously, he wants to, you know, keep the money flowing in from his wages. He wants to keep his job. But at some point, one has to say enough is enough.
Hmm. Ian, do you have an opinion on this?
I would go somewhere in the middle. As I said, he's not going to go if there's not another job. That I don't think right now his stock is unbelievably high that he would walk into another championship job. But say we have a good start to the season, gets towards January, and you know, he the relationship hasn't improved, if an offer comes in, I could definitely see him taking it and going at the first opportunity for a job of equal standing. So I don't think he'll go anywhere anytime soon. But yeah, it seems to me clear that there's not a good relationship between him and the management. And the first chance that comes, I wouldn't be surprised to see him walk to another club. So
the other jobs that are available in the sort of market that I would expect Parkinson to be operating in, there are other clubs that are just as much of a basket case as us. I mean, when the Reading job came up, he wasn't mentioned in too many dispatches. They were having financial problems at the time. Birmingham, much the same. I'm not sure that the grass is that much greener, you know. Yeah, Wanderers might be absolute mental cases at times, but probably, you know, 65% of all other clubs have also got problems with finances, etc. I'm not sure it'd be that massive a pool. I certainly don't think in a championship, he'd be the first choice of many teams. Yeah. Not to run him down, because I really don't mean to. I'm just trying to mean in terms of his options if he was to move on, because yeah, I think, you know, to leave a relatively secure job with nowhere to go would be daft.
But I think if Leeds, for example, hadn't been fishing in the market where they could get someone like Bielsa, he'd be the perfect person to try and do a job there. Not that they would have been ever looking at him, but you know, but there's a reason why we were so scared when the Reading job was vacant, and when Sunderland, they had apparently got an interest in him, we were worried because of how good a job he'd done with us. And the fact of the matter is, regardless of whether you think the grass isn't greener anywhere else, if I were Parky, I'd think, you know what, I've done a good job here, and I'm worth a look at some of these jobs which are possibly a bit more secure financially. When Bolton, we can't really say that with any degree of certainty.
We all know what happens once you get a few good results, half season of good results. You know, on the player basis, Guy Medin is case in point. He ended up at a promotion club, you know. We know that Phil Parkinson only needs to have a good half a season with Bolton before a club above the stature of the Reddings and the Birmingham could come in for him. And if we haven't got him locked down and totally happy at the club, then that could be the situation that we face.
Yeah, I mean, I don't expect him to leave, but it was just completely hypothetical. But yeah, go on, Chris.
Yeah, he made a very good point there. That I definitely agree. If you have that good 6 months, then that's to our benefit. So surely we should be... You know, if that was to come to pass, then that's for all our benefits, because we'd obviously be, you'd hope, in a better position in the league when he left, should he leave, and then also be in a better position to attract someone to replace him. There's, you know, it's all be mutually beneficial if that was to happen.
The problem is, I know it's a different hierarchy, but I don't trust any Bolton hierarchy to get an appointment right. This seems to be the first one they've got right since Big Sam was appointed.
Yeah, I think we'd all definitely be disappointed, you know, if he did walk, and as much as we don't expect him to, you know, if it came as a surprise at any point, even if it wasn't until January or later, you know, it's getting to the point where, you know, his patience is probably wearing a little bit thin. And I think, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, lads, but I think, is this the longest reign of a manager since Allardyce that we've had?
Yeah, I think Megson was a little bit longer. Yeah. So if he gets to Christmas, he might be overtaking that.
And I think I'm not amazed that he's still here, but I'm just, you know, that nothing's changed, and it's obviously signs that he's done a good job, and you know he definitely has. But you know, it's also getting to the point where you're wondering if, you know, when people come calling, you know, is he actually going to, you know, turn around and think, actually, that's a bit of me.
I really don't think that Parkinson, purely because of his attitude and demeanour, is the type of guy to walk unless the owners specifically want him out.
No, I'm not saying that either.
I rate him too highly as a manager. Like, I think he does want to release some frustration at some point. He's had 15 years as a manager, and he knows a lot better than to try and fight the hierarchy. He's developed this calm demeanour that over time it's just been nothing but beneficial to our club, and to try and change that just to have a little spat with our owners over finances, I think would be absolutely ridiculous, because if anything, that would hinder his job prospects.
Of course. I mean, I don't, you know, I'm not judging him based on, you know, how he must be feeling about it all at the minute, and I'm sure that there's not much he can really do about it either, and that's sort of why I question it. But at the same time, I, you know, looking at him and looking at his future at the club and both possibly away from it, I don't see, you know, the possibility of him leaving, really, because, like you said, James, he's got the experience, he knows what it's like to work under shit conditions, and, you know, the fact that he's just ploughing on through it, you know, without really moaning and doing such a fantastic job is, you know, something you wouldn't get.
Yeah, and if anything, if he can deal with volatile owners like Ken Anderson and his son Lee, then that puts them in good standing for when we eventually do get this investment that we've apparently been hyping over for ages. It'll stand him in good stead for him to keep his job and be actually able to spend the money and try and improve the club that he's developed such a reputation. I really do not see him working unless the owners want him out. And the owners won't want him out because he's saved their arse so many times.
True, yeah. Well, let's just hope we manage to keep hold of him and that he's not about to walk out on us because he's a very good manager. So, what have we got coming up? I believe we've got the Morecambe game behind closed doors on Tuesday. The under-23s are at Clitheroe on Wednesday. And then I think there's a bit of a joint game going on, which acts as the home pre-season fixture, which is Girona at the Leyland County Ground.
Looking forward to that one.
I'm sure a few of us will be there, so if you want to come and say hello for whatever silly reason, you can do.
Because we're minor celebrities, Will, that's why.
Of course.
If you want to go there on a Wednesday night between 5 and 6, you can witness myself making an absolute clown at 5-a-side as well, so why not?
I'll be there.
I will certainly be there.
And then what have we got after that? I think we've got Geisley on the Tuesday, and then the last
Bringing
game
in the big names.
Peterborough, of course, as ever. Yeah, so Peterborough would be the last one, and then obviously straight into the season with West Brom away. So yeah, got that to look forward to anyway. But let's just hope that times get a little bit cheerier, that we've actually got more than 15 players, and that things sort themselves out financially. But yeah.
It sounds like a Christmas list, that does, Well.
No, of course, yeah. Always optimistic. But
not West Brom could be a good hard stuffing.
You only need 11 players. Who needs any more?
No,
yeah. We're gonna win the league, boys.
It's coming home.
Too soon.
But yeah, just very last minute, we asked Twitter if they had any questions for us. We've only got two at the minute, but we may get some in later, which we may or may not record separately, but we'll get back to you at some point, I presume. So firstly, we've got one from Jamie, who says, clearly we need a few more players. Which position for you is most pressing? I think we've sort of covered that, haven't we?
Defence.
Yeah, centre forward.
I'd also argue centre mid, considering we have three centre mids, not including the youngsters.
Yeah, that's true as well. And then the other one's from Matt Armitage. He said, do you think we will bid for Wyke, or is it all conjecture similar to when we were linked with Rhodes a few seasons ago?
Considering that Rhodes is one of the laziest players I've ever seen, then I don't think it's a similar situation.
I don't think it's one of those where it's going to become an annual thing. I think it has happened, and I think I don't know this for a fact, but I presume that we have spoken to him and things have sort of...
We're probably trying to see if we can negotiate a lower offer than this apparent $1 million that's been going around, because maybe they'll take a lower offer just to get him off the books if he's completely unsettled at Bradford.
Yeah. I think if that happens, it'll be a last-minute thing, and as the window closes, I don't think it'll be any time soon.
No.
There's no reason for them to sell at a cheaper rate, not until the last minute.
Yeah, but I definitely wouldn't say it's a myth at this point. You know, I think it's definitely a possibility, just when and how, I think, is a bit... we're struggling with that at the minute, but does anyone else have any other topics that they want to cover before we close?
Nope.
Any pressing Good. Matters that they'd like to get out, or Tom, James?
I think I'd probably like to put to the group, I think the formation that we played in the Halifax game. Obviously, Will, you were there. You'll be able to correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, of course.
Was it 4-4-2?
Yeah, it was. Sorry, I sort of touched on that. So obviously it was 2-1 at the weekend. Alfie and Amiobi were the scorers. It was 4-4-2, simply because we only have two centre midfielders.
But even assuming that we obviously bring some more in, which let's be honest, we've got to hope that we do. Would that be the formation you'd like to see us playing, or would you prefer to see a hark back to either 4-2-3-1 or 3-5-2?
I mean, I said throughout last season I thought we should have gone with 4-4-2, and on the final day when we did and we switched to that, when obviously Will Ram produced that moment of magic, that was a very happy man, because I just thought at the end of the day, that's what needed to happen, in my opinion, and just play the old-fashioned way of having two wingers, you know, and then some lads in the box just to get on the end of something scrappy and or nod it in or whatever, I think was perfect. And to see Donaldson acting as the sort of big man in the middle and getting his head about it, just getting himself about, really was really promising to see. I mean, obviously we were, you know, a step above them, as you'd expect, but, you know, Alfie just looked really up for it, obviously got himself a goal. Who else played as well that I can think of any note? Jason Lowe, obviously, in the midfield, just looked very solid. Looking forward to seeing him. But
yeah, I heard Will Buckley had a really good game.
Buckley played well as well, yeah. Sammy did as well.
Found his level at last.
Donaldson even got himself a goal, which was debated whether or not it was offside. I don't think it was. And I think Parkinson was frustrated about that, you know, because it's always good to get them off the mark, but I'm sure it won't be long before he does.
I think he's long enough in the tooth, isn't he, to be able to remain confident playing those.
Yeah,
wearing number 8 shirt, though, as a striker is disappointing.
No, I know.
I hope that can't be the real one, surely.
They're just temporary numbers. They've got to be.
I think just going back to the formation, that I guess possibly that 4-4-2 could be an option this season, because Vella and Lowe are going to have a lot more legs than Henry and Prattley. I think maybe one of the reasons we'd never played 4-4-2 before is because we never had the legs. Like, did it look like that Vella and Lowe could kind of provide that?
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to judge given, you know, the pace of the play and whatever. And obviously, this isn't me bigging us up or anything, but there was obviously a clear gulf, you know, in ability there. But yeah, you know, Vella looked up for it. He was, you know, sort of leaving Lowe playing as the holding midfielder, really. And he was getting forward as much as he could, and I felt like it just looked like a solid formation. I think at times it was a diamond four in the middle. But, you know, the defence was solid as well. To say that there's literally, well, pretty much only four of them at the minute, you know, and they've obviously got a good working relationship there. And I think even Alfie and Donaldson could become, you know, a very good partnership, and that's definitely one to look out for as well, providing that, well, if we don't sign anyone else up front, or, you know, if that's what's favoured by Parkinson, then, you know, I'm not complaining by any means. But
any of you favour a return to 3-5-2 if we do bring in Robinson, and we seem to have two right backs that are capable of playing that wing back role?
Yeah, I mean, like you say, I think if we get the players in, and if we've got some versatility, you know, like if we get Maurice and Robinson back in, you know, where we can play in that formation, then, you know, I'm not against that at all. But I think if you then do that, you've also got to bring in a relatively solid holding midfielder as well to play alongside Lowe. But, it's obviously all just dependent on recruitment, I think, at the minute. But, you know,
we are crying out for an enforcer at this point.
Yeah, of course. But it was a good first showing, you know, to say the least. But
good to hear.
You know, there's nothing more that can be really taken from it. I mean, I don't know whether if you have any conspiracies about, you know, pre-season form, but
no real conspiracies. But considering we're playing a La Liga side in Girona, maybe we'll get a better indication of what level we're playing at when we're playing against higher ranked opposition than us.
Yeah. I can't wait for David Wheater to bully Christian Stuani.
that will be the game that I think we play. You know, what'll play at West Brom as well. So that'll be really good to watch, I think, as well. But
That and the Peterborough game, they'll be the biggest indicators of how we're going to be playing.
Definitely. I just wanted to touch on Conn Hall as well, because I know he'll be a popular one, because he came on at the hour mark as well. He struggled to get into the game, to be honest. I mean, he was man-marked, effectively. I think they obviously, they'd heard of him or whatever, because he just didn't really get any time on the ball at all. And although he held it up well, he didn't really get much chance on goal. I mean, he had one deft header, which nearly found the bottom corner, but it was just a really good save. So
it also didn't help that in the second half it was a really young squad playing against an experienced Halifax side.
There's a few death challenges as you'd expect, you know, in the last stages. And I think, like Parkinson said, there was one or two we were trying a little bit too hard. You know, went into the book trying to, you know, throw themselves about, which, it wasn't particularly impressive, but at the same time, you could understand them wanting to make a name for themselves. But, you know, we'll see them progress, hopefully. over the course of the season, because no doubt we will need them, because I just can't see us signing 7 in 2.5 weeks or whatever it is. It just seems like an impossible job to me. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I think we've touched on that, but we've got possibly the likes of Hall, Earing, Brockbank, maybe.
Brockbank,
struggling for other names, but maybe the reason why we haven't pushed so hard with recruitment so early is because he quite fancies bringing their slot in as his backup, which it would be positive, I suppose. But
oh, he's got no choice.
Yeah, well, that's another shout, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, it would either be that, or Parkinson is waiting for the loan window to open to 4 and 5 clubs, because maybe then some of the Premier League clubs will be able to let some of their youngsters go out on loan and we'd be able to snap some of them up.
Yeah, out of that 7 that he wants, you'd think possibly 3 or 4 would be loans.
Yeah, easily. But I'd recommend going and have a look at Parkinson's presser, actually, because it was one of his most insightful ones. You know, he touched on sort of all bases. So yeah, definitely go and have a look at that. But yeah, unless anyone else has got anything else to add, then I think we should wrap it up, because we've just gone over the hour mark. So where can we find you on social media, Tom?
My Twitter is TJ14Wanderer.
James, where can they find you?
You can find me at Real James Jarvis.
Ian?
Yeah, at RosaB89.
There you go. And Chris, you're not.
Nowhere.
Not, but may see.
We don't even know where you are, Chris.
We don't.
He's a ghost.
Witness protection program. The less you know, the better.
Chris, go on. We'll make this an exclusive. Can we expect more content from you in terms of writing? Mm.
Probably not.
Probably not. Fair enough. I'm sure some of them who actually noticed who'd written that It's Coming Home article will have had some joy out of it anyway. But
yeah, I hope so.
Go and have a read of that if you haven't already. But yeah, so I think it's time to end. So say goodbye, Chris.
Goodbye, Chris.
Goodbye, Tom.
Goodbye, Tom.
Goodbye, James.
Goodbye, James.
Goodbye, Ian.
Goodbye, Ian.
And I've been Will Jones. You can find me on Twitter at WI1LJ. And it's goodbye from me, Set La Vie.